Welcome to Arkansas Cooks. This is your host, Mary Tweet. I'm here to meet and eat with Arkansas cooks, and then I tell you all about it. Last week, we cooked with T.R. McChrystal out in Sisters, Oregon. And this week, T.R. and I are just going to sit down and dish. Don't go away, you're listening to Arkansas Cooks. Good afternoon, I'm Mary Tweet, and you are listening to Arkansas Cooks. This past summer, I was so fortunate to have T.R. McChrystal cook a beautiful salmon omelet for me. And you may have heard me talk about Central Oregon before. I really do love it there, and we go to kind of escape the heat of Central Arkansas because the summers in Central Oregon are very nice. We stay in a very small town. Sisters, Oregon is about 2,000 people, 2,000 plus. And don't let the size fool you. Sisters, Oregon has a lot going on in the summer. And I have a lot of favorite places to eat right there in that tiny little town and in that little area. But one of my favorites is Jen's Garden. It's an intimate cottage. And they even boast intimate cottage cuisine. Now, their executive chef and owner is T.R. McChrystal. And I felt so honored to sit down and speak with him. The bonus was, as you heard last week, he cooked me this amazing omelet, and you may hear me eating it a little bit more this week. So come with me to Sisters, Oregon, and we'll get to dish with T.R. McChrystal. Wow, and that smells good. That omelet smells good. I feel very privileged. This is like, you know, breakfast with T.R.
Right.
You're quite famous. I know that.
Oh, yeah?
Didn't you get like Central Arkansas Chef of the Year and Iron Chef and...
Not Central Arkansas.
I mean, excuse me, Central Oregon. I'm sorry, I'm still in Arkansas. Central Oregon?
Central Oregon. We did a Iron Chef competition at the Bite of Bend, which is kind of a foodie event that they do every kind of June time frame. And because we won, we were invited to go to the Bite of Portland, which was kind of like... more of the Oregon Iron Chef competition.
Yeah.
And we came up runners up in that one.
Nice.
Against a guy who is really amazing. So I don't feel bad whatsoever.
But you've always been, have you always been in Oregon as a chef?
Yeah, for the most part. Steamboat Inn over on the North Umpqua was one place that I'd worked a long time ago. But I've worked in Sun Valley, Idaho, and I worked in the, you know, Sierras up near Lake Tahoe. Down in the Bay Area of San Francisco.
Yeah.
South Bay. Yep.
Now, you grew up in California. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
And you actually went to... Did you go to culinary school?
I didn't. I went to college at Cal Poly Pomona in Southern California and have a degree in hotel, restaurant, and hospitality management.
Wow.
And while I was going to school there, I was working in restaurants. My intention was never to be in the restaurant business.
At all.
My intention was to be, you know, probably work in the hotel business was kind of where I thought I wanted to go.
Wow.
But while you're going to school, you need to make money. And so I started working in restaurants and really enjoyed it. And started working with some really amazing people at amazing restaurants. And chefs and things like that that kind of had a profound influence. Very down-to-earth kind of people, kind of similar to myself. They didn't really let the stress of the business overwhelm them too much because it's really easy to get overwhelmed with the business, especially someplace frenetic like Los Angeles or, you know,
San Francisco,
in the Bay Area.
Yeah, it's tough. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a tough business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so what brought you to Central Oregon then?
My father had retired up in Oregon. I had never really been to Oregon much. I had a girlfriend that went to Oregon State University. So when I was in my 20s, I came up to Oregon State a couple times to visit. But, you know,
no
it was
deal.
Usually in the like the rainy part of the year. And, you know, it doesn't look all that attractive in the wintertime.
No, it doesn't.
So then my father bought a place over on the North Umpqua River, and I was working at a ski resort, and he said, what are you doing this summer? I said, I don't know. He said, well, I know some people have this bed and breakfast, and they're doing breakfast and lunch right now, and they want to do dinner, but they don't know what to do. You know, would you like to come up and spend the summer and help them out? And I'm like, I'll think about it. And he's like, yeah, and the fishing is really good, too. Never mind, I'll be there. So learned how to steelhead fish on the North Umpqua, which is like, it's like the graduate school of steelhead fishing rivers in the Pacific Northwest.
And these are all fly fishing, right?
Yeah, fly fishing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I do know that you're a big fly fisherman.
Oh, yeah.
And
I try to be.
Yeah. And you're able to do that because this is fly fishing country.
Yeah. Yep. Just went fishing yesterday on the Metolius.
Yeah.
Which is like the graduate school of trout fishing because it's
so beautiful.
Very challenging. I always say like the North Umpqua and the Metolius are the two most beautiful places in the United States to not catch a fish.
Oh. Well, and we were up at Camp Sherman walking on the Metolius yesterday. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Really beautiful.
It's fabulous. So it's like my favorite place.
Yeah.
If I'm not here, I'm there. I'm riding my bike out there.
It's really pretty.
Hiking out there. You hike Black Butte.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And the river is amazing.
So this omelet's amazing. Mm-hmm. Really, really good. You can really taste the ratatouille. Like you said, the anchovy paste makes it, or the anchovies that you add at make it a little salty, but it's really, you can taste the squash, you can taste the zucchini, you can taste all that. And the salmon is delightful. So I had to mention that before I got caught up in anything else.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, you know, we're living, or just visiting actually, the Pacific Northwest like I have, I've learned a lot about the food of the Pacific Northwest, and it really is quite unique in that you have a blend of really great seafood, but you also have this really great harvest here, like really nice vegetables and berries and beautiful, really a harvest.
Well, the interesting thing with the Pacific Northwest is that what most people don't appreciate is that when people say Oregon and Washington, the media association is that, it's lots of fir trees and dense forest and lots of rain. And the reality is that both of those states, that's less than a third of each of those states. The rest of those states are basically like high desert.
On the other side of the Cascade Mountains.
So the vast majority of our,
your terra firma, the surrounding areas, right?
Yeah, yeah. It is high desert. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if we didn't have that third that's all rainy, and we have those beautiful valleys that where we're growing all these amazing foods all year round. Mm. So a lot of our resources come out of the valley and then come over the Cascades to Central Oregon. And we do have some people farming in the area now. It's very challenging because we have such a short growing season.
Yeah,
it's
and like there's lots of irrigation.
And because we have frosts that can continue into late June, a lot of times it's very challenging to get everything started and then ripe by the time you can harvest it before the next frost in late September, October.
But you also have a lot of great livestock. There's a lot of cattle around here.
Cattle,
there's a lot
sheep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Llamas.
Llamas. We don't eat many of those.
No,
but
that's good. That's okay. I know that they shear a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But it is rural, and it is quite vibrant. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot going on.
I have to say that I don't feel like I miss anything. Mm-mm. By living out, especially in Sisters and Central Oregon, being Bend and Redmond and the communities around us. If you need to have nightlife and you need to have, that extra stimuli, Portland's not that far away.
3 hours.
Eugene's not that far away.
Right.
And Bend can satisfy most of it. You know, if you need to go shopping, like walk around and go into the Gap and things like that, you can go to the old mill and go walk around. And it's a beautiful spot. A lot better than the mall in Portland.
Yeah.
But if you're craving like some of the more cultural things, like I said, Portland's the perfect. It's perfect because you can go and make an event out of it, which is to spend the night and eat mm-hmm. at the restaurants, because Portland has amazing restaurants.
Really good ones.
And then you get to come home, and then all the things that you really, I mean, that make up the rest of your life 6 days a week is, you know, playing on trails and being in this environment.
Right.
And I feel way more fortunate to be here and visit Portland than to live in Portland and have to visit Sisters.
Well, and this is a community of bikes and dogs and kids and people and
Sisters, everywhere. Sisters is a really cool community in the sense that we have all sorts of diversity when it comes to, you know, where you're politically, how you affiliate yourself, and then how you're, you know, whether you're socially conservative or liberal, how, you know, it's so
everywhere.
Diverse. But the cool part is that everybody can come together, and when we come together at events, it's not like we hold that against each other, because you don't believe what I believe.
That's actually the second time I've heard that this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I really do think that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we don't go and sit in the bar and commiserate with the other folks, but, you know, when we go to the events, we all get along really well.
Yeah.
And then the thing that's really nice is, even with our diversity, we can come together and help address and solve problems in our community.
That's,
you know,
nice.
Whether it's like, you know, people low-income housing, or if it's has to do with providing foods for families, or supporting you know, people who are a little bit less or who are disadvantaged compared to the rest of us,
right? Or education, or any of those kinds of issues. What I've noticed is that you've got all these new sidewalks and the new lamps, and it looks so great,
amazing. Yeah,
yeah, it was wonderful.
I was joking. They just put the light posts up the other night, you know, during the night, and so in the morning, all the light posts are in finally, and they're just beautiful. Kind of looks like this, you know, it looks like beam, you know, wood beams with
big,
you know,
lanterns.
Foundry,
yeah.
You know, kind of metalwork on it, and these big lanterns hanging off of them. And, you know, you're driving down the street, and I said, oh my gosh, the property value just went up again. Because, I mean, it's visually, it's
beautiful,
and everybody's redone the fronts, and it's kind of like it's a makeover, and I just, Sisters is kind of one of those unique places where it's not, you living here, you don't feel, like somebody from New York City might come out here and go, oh my gosh, it's out in the middle of nowhere. But for living here, you don't feel like you're in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Yeah, you feel like you're in the center of the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
And as far as we're concerned, everyone can come visit us.
There's nothing wrong with that. So what do you see as trends in cooking as far as where you are in the Pacific Northwest? Or do you see trends?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, you see trends all the time, but, you know, it's kind of like music trends. It's like fashion trends, about any type of trend. There's a tendency that they're cyclical. So, you know, something goes out of favor and then it comes back again, and then it goes out and it comes back again. You know, when it's going out is when you start seeing it on hamburgers at Carl's Jr. Then you know you better stop using, you know, like portobello mushrooms. It's gotten too mainstream. So now you got to find something else. And then that's when you start going back to something that's a little more esoteric. And then that comes back in.
Right.
But quite honestly, I mean, there's a very, very small percentage of people who want to be that want to be challenged by the food that they're eating. Most people want it to be, they just want it to taste good, look good, and ingredients that they're comfortable with.
Right.
So, you know, you don't put brains on the plate, and you don't put, you know, testicles and, you know, weird stuff like that, because that's not going to appeal to a lot of people. I mean, we do escargot every once in a while, and quite honestly, it's a stretch for some.
Right.
But in general, you just kind of, I always say, it's like, I tell the guys, I said, you know, our job is to take ordinary ingredients and then make them extraordinary. Because you get in, I mean, you can go and spend tons of money on ingredients. You know, I can order all sorts of stuff from Seattle, all these weird, you know, little,
urchin fish.
You know, truffles from Italy, and I can get all, you know, I can spend a huge amount of money. is it appreciably better? Does it make my food appreciably better to have, you know, those ingredients per se? Not necessarily. I'd rather work with the ingredients that are more readily available to me, and be able to keep them at a reasonable cost, so that people can come in and enjoy it. I mean, our intention when we did the restaurant wasn't to make it a fine dining restaurant. The idea was that we were inviting people over to our house for dinner, and this is how we'd set the table for, you know, dinner at our house.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
For breakfast.
And then and then it just kind of evolved into, you know, people kind of associating with fine dining, and I think that's because of the 5-course price fix.
Yeah, idea. And I do think that is why the wineries in Central Oregon and Washington and France, I mean, you've had wineries from France uh-huh. before. I think that's why they like to come here, because you do such a really remarkable job of matching really great food with wine. Mm-hmm. And I mean, everyone that I've ever been to has always commented on that. Oh, they said, oh, now, you know, what TR has done with the quail, you're going to really taste this wine.
Right.
So, I mean, it's so exciting to hear winemakers talk about that.
Yeah, and have them be excited.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fun. It's fun to me because, I mean, as with everything, you know, people who are really good at certain things, there's people who are pretty humble and, you know, self-deprecating. And then there's others who are very full of themselves. And what's fun for me is, like, to get somebody who's kind of, who wants to come in and kind of dictate terms and tell me what to do and how I should be, you know, preparing food for his wine dinners and things like that. It's like, you know, now he's made it a challenge. So now it's like, all right, I'm gonna show this guy that I actually know what I'm doing, so that when they leave, they're gonna be blown away and go, oh my God, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, and I know what happens is they go to other events and
they're not too
great. There's some, you know, some chefs that, you know, they'll even admit, I really don't like wine. I don't drink wine. It's like, how can you, you know, position yourself in the restaurant business, in the industry, you've decided to be fine dining or, you know, something close to that, and you don't drink wine?
Yeah,
I mean, you have to drink something.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably do. It's just not wine.
Well, and I don't know if people know a lot of times about the wineries in Napa Valley and in Sonoma, but they don't often know that the amazing wines that are in Southern Washington that I know of, in the Walla Walla area, and then Willamette area, and all the beautiful wines in Oregon.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
So the Oregon wine industry is probably in its 40-something years now.
Yeah.
Washington.
It's young.
Very similar. And so it seems young, but they've been around a long time.
Yeah.
And so these guys, they have it dialed in now. And people from all over, winemakers from all over the world now come to see what's being done, because they keep hearing about, you know, Oregon Pinot Noir, and they hear about Washington Cabs and, you know, Malbec and, you know, Cab Franc and Merlot, and it only makes sense that they've weathered the hard part, which was like the first 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're kind of enjoying their maturity now.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting. I mean, when I was in college, this was almost 30 years ago, one of the classes I took was, you know, wine and spirits as part of my curriculum. And the teacher who was instructing that class was talking about how they were developing all of these computer models, UC Davis, viniculture. They were using technology and satellite imagery and things like that to kind of map the world and look for new microclimates for wine production. And now they have, I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, you have people growing, I mean, vineyards in, you know, like in New York.
In New York.
They're
all over the United States.
They're all over, yeah. And so through these computer models, they've been able to identify these little pockets where, you know, wine will do well and what varietals will work in those particular areas.
Yeah,
and then looking
crazy
at the, you know, the terroir to see if, you know, if it's conducive to the vines to be able to get down and find water. It's amazing. And imagine, like, you know, some place like Arkansas probably hasn't been doing it for very long.
Yeah.
You know, they're at the infancy part. So you know, they have to get a lot of traction going before, you know, like 40 years from now, maybe, you know.
Who knows?
There'll be great wines coming out of Arkansas. You never know. Of course, there'll be some sort of cataclysmic earthquake that'll separate the
That doesn't surprise me. That probably totally will happen. So it's fun. It's fun to come out here and see the different varieties and see the different really small wineries that mm-hmm. offer, you know, just a very small amount, but you're drinking some really amazing wine.
Yeah. You know? I think the thing that's the most amazing to me is, like, when you go to that small winery and you're looking, or, you know, or if you even look at, like, parts of France, like someone was showing me a map of the Burgundy area, Beaune, and the Premier Cru, what is considered Premier Cru, which is like the best of the best of the best. And there's like little 2-acre slices, and, you know, there's like 30 or 40 of these little pockets that have been designated Grand Cru, and there's like 2 acres of grapes in each of those pockets. And then they make enough wine to where people can get it all over the world. And that's amazing to me. Yeah. You think about the, you know, somebody who's making 100, like a small production, 100 cases of wine. So they have 100 cases of wine, and they distribute in 10 states. So that's 10 cases of wine per state. And if you bought one, just think, like, how precious that one case of wine is, because it's never, you're never going to have it again.
Yeah.
I mean, once it's gone.
It's gone.
You're never going to have, you can't bring that vintage back.
Yeah. And isn't that the quest for wine collectors, is to find the wine that they can have, and, you know, that nobody else has, or that's unique.
I mean, I suppose so. I mean, I think it's. I think
I'm
most,
not a wine collector. So
no, for me, it's. I mean, I like to drink great wine. Can I afford to? I can afford to when somebody brings it and shares it with me. But in general, I mean, I can't afford to go into a restaurant and spend a couple $100 on a bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm. That's hard.
I mean, that couple $100 bottle of wine probably costs $70 or $80 at the supermarket. So, I mean, if you really want to try it, you go buy it at the supermarket and then bring it to a restaurant and have pay the corkage, and then you get to try it out. But most of these amazing, you know, high value wines, you're not even supposed to drink them for 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's what I was told.
They like set it aside and hope that you stored it properly so that when you open it 10 years from now, it's not vinegar, or
you get to dress a salad with it.
What happens is they finally are figuring out what their climate is best for, and it might not be best for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, which is what everybody can do up in the northern part of the valley.
Right.
So, but it's fun to watch them evolve. It's like watching, you were talking about Walla Walla, watching Walla Walla evolve in their winemaking. You know, they were, because of the, you know, that really constant heat in the summertime over there, they get these really, you know, fruit-forward wines. I mean, you know, rich, concentrated fruit. And then they try to mellow that a little bit by putting it in, you know, heavily toasted barrels. So it's kind of like you end up with this heavy fruit, and then you get this kind of vanilla quality that the barrel lends to it. So it's very crowd-pleasing,
mm-hmm.
but now you go to Walla Walla, and they're starting to refine all of it. So they're reducing the amount of toast on their barrels and the amount of barrel time for their wines. They're also keeping a closer eye on that concentration of fruit. And what they're trying to do is catch it before it gets too overly concentrated, so that they can get a much more balanced wine, something that has a little more tannic structure that lasts over a long, long period of time,
and it becomes a very, very, very fine wine.
Yeah. But they're the fun part, they're great to drink, you know, young, great with food when they're young. I mean, if you lay it down then and take it out in 7-10 years, then you probably just want to drink it, you know, with friends before you have dinner.
Okay.
because the food takes away from it sometimes.
Because of its concentration, or?
Well, it's just becoming, it's becoming so balanced that you don't that you want to experience it by itself. You don't want to influence it with food. Whereas when it's younger, you've got, you know, you got sometimes you'll have acidity out of balance. You'll have other things that aren't quite in balance yet. But that lends itself really well to food to kind of help influence the wine.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I mean, you get like these big Chardonnays from California and stuff like that, and you can spend a lot of money, or you spend a lot of money on a white Burgundy or something like that. Those are really like a cocktail wine because they're so rich and they have so much structure. You want to be able to just enjoy it and enjoy it for what it is. The other wines, you know, the younger wines, they're best with food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that that's what's so interesting. Is thinking of wine as food.
Yeah.
You know, and that's such a, you know, it's so much of the time it's not a concept for people, but to think of the wine as a food, then I think there's a little bit more respect involved with that, and you don't, you know, you're not going to, you're drinking it because of the flavor, because it is a food.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really kind of an interesting concept to go with.
Well, the thing that's also interesting in Central Oregon is that we've become somewhat of a little, you know, Bend in particular is now like this epicenter of microbrewing. So we've
beers,
got a
right.
million microbreweries in town too. And so, you know, now we're trying to figure out how do we pair food with beer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been kind of like burgers and fries and pizzas and things like that. But now we're trying to get a little bit more sophisticated as to how we do that. And beer is becoming similar to like wine in the sense that, you know, people are more apt to drink one or two really well-crafted beers than, you know, just drinking a whole bunch of,
right.
you know, some...
Because you're hot and you just
some
want to be...
Lager,
right.
you know, type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It's... And quite honestly, being a beer connoisseur is way more affordable than being a wine connoisseur. You know,
that's true. That's
you have
true.
Two glasses of beer for $10. You get one glass of wine for $10
if you're
lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky. Wow, this omelet is so amazing. It is like a dinner, I swear. It
yeah.
feels like it's dinner.
Just,
so good.
I just rode 20 miles on my bike, so I'm like, I was
You may
hungry.
Need to do one more of these.
I was hungry.
Who knows? Well, TR, thank you.
Yeah,
this has been really, really fun.
Yeah, no worries.
If you're in Central Oregon, Downtown Sisters on the corner of Larch and Hood.
Yeah.
Not hard to find.
No. Well, at worst case, just ask somebody.
Where's Jen's? They'll know exactly what you're talking about. Great.
Cool.
We're back. I'm Mary Tweed, and this is Arkansas Cooks. You can find out more about Jen's Garden at intimatecottagecuisine.com. And you can also go to my website, arkansascooks.com. Now, if you're interested in writing me, you can do that as well. Mary@arkansascooks.com. I love to hear from folks. The stuff I get is always fantastic. Well, that's all the time we have today for Arkansas Cooks. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to thank T.R. McChrystal at Jen's Garden. Can't wait to see him next year. Also, thanks for the tremendous help that I get from Travis Hill. He makes me sound so good. This is Mary Tweet reminding all you Arkansas cooks, life is too short to eat bad food, so only eat great food. Eat it with great people, people that you love. It'll taste so much better.